Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. It's an Outdoor Wednesday. I love Wednesdays. And today we're going to start our Wednesday show by taking a look at the Lower Wisconsin Riverway and the ecology of the riverway. Focus on the birds and the fish primarily, I think, that call the river home. But we can probably get into some other things as well as we visit with our two guests today. With me in the studio, John Lyons. John, the curator of fishes for the UW Zoology Museum, semi-retired after 33 years as a fisheries research scientist and supervisor for the Wisconsin DNR. He studied the Lower Wisconsin River for over 40 years. John, welcome.
Thanks, Larry. Good to be here.
Good to have you back. It's been
25 years.
It's only been 25 years.
Seems like yesterday.
With us as well, Mike Mossman. Mike is also a semi-retired DNR ecologist. His work focuses on birds, small mammals, amphibians, and natural areas. And Mike, good to have you back as well.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here. I think it was 25 years ago about for me, too, last time I was here.
You guys haven't aged a bit. Neither have I, of course.
Yep.
John and Mike will be giving a presentation. That's one of the reasons we're having them on today, too, because they'll be giving a presentation about the Lower Wisconsin Riverway at the Wisconsin the Wetlands Science Conference. It's coming up February 24th through the 26th. And we'll be talking a little about that as we move along today. And Wisconsin Wetlands Association, probably the place to look for more information about that. But anyway, as we talk about the Lower Wisconsin River way, I want to hear from you. Maybe you've got some stories to share about the wildlife or the experiences you've had on the Wisconsin River. I spent a lot of time on the Wisconsin River, and I certainly have some great experiences. Maybe you live along the river. I have some friends who have a place along the river. Maybe you're helping to preserve the habitat. Maybe you can talk about how you do that. Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or just drop us an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Let's probably ask you both first, and maybe start with Mike. How did you come to study the Wisconsin River?
Growing up in Sauk County, I spent some time on the river and loved being out, for days at a time with my dad and my brother. And I think by the time I started getting interested in birds when I was in college, it was a natural draw. I mean, I was worked with DNR in the early 70s. I had some freedom to work on birds around the state, and the Riverway was not only a magical place, but just full of a lot of birds and a lot of conservation issues that we needed to attend to.
Yeah, absolutely. And some fish too, John. And fish might have brought you there?
I came here for graduate school in the late 70s, and my projects were actually up north, but when I was in the Madison area, I was always looking for great places to go fishing, to poke around and see fish, and I discovered the Lower Wisconsin, and it is the best place in the state to see variety of fish and really interesting things that you can see nowhere else. So I fell in love with it early, and fortunately, when I started with the DNR, I was able to get involved in a bunch of projects over the years and continue that effort and love.
Well, I tell you, and here you are between the two of you, you got a good 70 years of experience along the Riverway. Has it changed a lot? The river I'm talking about.
not a lot. I guess that was the kind of the point of making it the Riverway. It's improved in a lot of ways. The water quality has improved a lot since, if you want to go back to the 60s, it's a completely different place, and John can talk to that about the fish quality.
Yeah.
There's recent changes with climate change that maybe we can talk about with all these long-term summer floods, but a lot of it's in good shape, but there's always new issues to attend to.
Yeah, I'm sure about that. And the fish, you're right about the fish. When I was a kid, the eating the fish out of the Wisconsin River, parts of the Wisconsin anyway. I think John mostly was at paper mills.
It was waste from paper mills, and so even if you were like the lower Wisconsin, hundreds of miles downstream, the fish would absorb some of those chemicals into their muscles, and I mean, you couldn't even cook the things in your house, much less eat them. They would just reek. And that that's gone now, so that's been a big improvement, and it probably. A little of that lingered into the late 80s, early 90s. So it's been about 30, 35 years since we've had to deal with that. But, yeah, in the 60s and 70s, the water quality was much worse. There were fish kills. There were contaminants. There were, you know, this off flavor is putting it mildly, where you just couldn't eat the fish. You wouldn't want to eat the fish. And so that's been a big change. But and so, like Mike said, the good news is it hasn't changed a whole lot, relatively speaking.
The lower river,
we
should define that. It starts about what, Prairie du Sac?
Yeah, Prairie du Sac. So it's a little over 92 miles from there down to the Mississippi, and that's what we call the lower. And then, you know, there's 350 more miles of river upstream of that, but and those areas are very different, and they've improved a lot because that's where all those paper mills and sewage discharges and things were historically. So the upper parts of the river have gotten much, much better, but the lower parts improved as well.
And it's and as I understand it, John, the Wisconsin River is one of the highest quality large rivers in the Midwest.
Yeah, absolutely. It and most of that reason is because of, I think, what the Wetland Conference will be getting into is the intact floodplain, largely intact floodplain. So many rivers have had their shorelines completely modified and cities and industries and everything. And the natural vegetation, the marshes, the wetlands, the sloughs, things like that have disappeared. But the lower Wisconsin retains that. It in some ways looks a lot like it would have, you know, 300, 400, 500 years ago. And so that's unusual, to say the least, for the for most of the Midwest.
Yeah, and Mike, as you go down the river, I mean, as you go down the lower, you're seeing, you're not seeing high-rise buildings in line all along the river.
No, you see, there's several villages along the river that you may or may not see. You know, it's a pleasure actually canoeing past Sauk City, Prairie du Sac. There's plenty of wildlife there, and there's, you know, people enjoying the river, but it's pretty wild. And, you know, thanks to all those glacial sands that were flooded down and deposited there to make these deep terraces of sand and moving water courses and so on that have kept development out of the riverway.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
For the river, certainly.
So, you know, when I was 17, 18 years old, sometimes we'd grab a bunch of people and tie a bunch of inner tubes together and just float down the lower.
Still happens, and still a lot of fun.
It's still a lot of fun. I've jumped in a canoe more than once, too, and done that stretch. Well, not the whole stretch,
right?
But good chunks of it. A lot of fun. Rick in Wisconsin Rapids has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Rick.
Well, hello, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I'm very interested in this topic. I retired on Lake Peatonwell in 2005, and I have sailed on Lake Peatonwell with my sailboat since the mid-70s. And what I want to talk about is how we were able to, our citizen group, how we were able to get money out of the state budget to accomplish the TMDL. And I'm going to tell you my real quick story. So we invited the politicians to the water, and our group was called Peatonwell and Castle Rock Stewards, abbreviated as Packers. We invited the politicians to the water in 2008, and a local politician, eight of them came, a local politician, Representative Marvin Schneider, asked, what do you want from me? And I said, we want $2 billion. And he says, what would you do with $2 million? I said, we would do a TMDL, which is a water quality study that the DNR did. Well, we got $750,000 out of the state budget the next spring. And
for there, you went on to, it's an example, I guess, of citizen participation, citizen action. Do we get a lot, and thanks for talking about it, Rick, do we get a lot of that relating to the lower Wisconsin River? So Rick's Castle Rock and Petenwell, that flowage, my uncle had a tavern on Castle Rock Lake, Happy's Landing, and I spent a lot of summers there, our good share of many a summer, and he was involved in a lot of that too. But on the lower?
Yeah, there's not a big population that lives on the river that's invested that way, but there's a lot of people that are because they love to use the river and they just care about it. And there's an organization called Friends of Lower Wisconsin, Wisconsin Riverway, FLO, who take a pretty active role. And John and I are both on their science team, and they do a lot of things on the river. They sponsor science projects that have to do with conservation issues. They sponsor the Kids Don't Float program, where at the many of the landings, there are life jackets there that you can just pick up. You don't, mm-hmm. Pick it up, use it, leave it at the next landing when you get off. They do a lot of education about safety on the river. So it's about recreation. It's about using the river. It's also about conservation and preservation of the river. So that's one group that does that.
Yeah, and the Lower Wisconsin is unique in that it's a designated state entity.
And what does that mean?
Well, that's a good question, because it's not a state park. It's not a state forest. But I guess it'd be – but it's a public entity that where there's a Lower Wisconsin Riverway Board that involves – there's permanent staff, but then there's a variety of board members from – the communities around the river, and they have some authority over what can be done along the river, and how the river should be managed. And so they have some authority. They're advisory. They're also a conduit for which citizens can raise concerns, promote what they want to see done on the river, get that information to the DNR, for example, or other units of government, federal government, that might be involved in actually doing the work or doing the management out there. So it's the only, I think, state riverway that's been mm-hmm. designated. And so it's unique, so it's hard to define.
Yeah.
But it's a government entity. It's a formally designated entity that none of the other rivers in the state have.
And there's a lot of diversity, I think, along the different kinds of habitat. I mean, what are you going to talk about that? Maybe, Mike, you can start in on that, and John can chime in.
Sure. There's a one of the really special things about the river, as John alluded to, is that you've got these great examples of not only wetlands, but the uplands that are connected to them.
Yeah.
And how the wetlands, of course, are dependent on those uplands. And a lot of the animals... and plants use both, and there's many different kinds. There's at least 20 different plant animal communities distinguished by the state that occur on the riverway, and some of the best examples in the state are there. Everything from the aquatic communities, such as the river itself and the backwaters, to the floodplain forests, the marshlands, and then sedge meadows, and then uplands that are very much connected to them, like the sand barrens and sand prairies that are on those deep sand terraces, and the floodplain forests, and going up onto the bluffs where you have the forested communities and the bluff prairies and so on. So together, this is it's like this necklace of beads that are all connected, and you can go from one to the other, and for many animals, say for amphibians that many of which live on the uplands and need wetlands to for reproduction to lay their eggs in.
Sure.
They're both right there, and there are many of these. In many parts of the state, these same communities are disconnected from each other by roads, crop fields, et cetera. And in the river, you've got this continuity both up and down the river and from the river up to the tops of the bluffs in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it's
very, very diverse.
And you're going to see, in terms of wildlife, what aren't you not going to see? I mean, if you think about anything, any type of wildlife that exists in Wisconsin, they would probably all be found, almost all of them. Maybe
a lot. A lot. There's 150 bird species that, that nest on the Riverway, and that's
150.
Yeah.
And how many species do we have in the state?
Well, I don't know what it is for breeding now, but that's most of them.
That's most of them. Yeah. And fish.
Well, yeah, there are 90 fish species that would call that resident that are actually there for long stretches of time, and that's, yeah, again, that's about two-thirds of the number of species in the state in this one environment, and it's a stronghold for many rare species, rare fishes, and really unusual things like paddlefish or sturgeon or things that most other places are not common or absent, and so the Wisconsin River is sort of their best place.
Talking about the lower Wisconsin River today with a couple of experts, Mike Mossman, a semi-retired DNR ecologist. He works, focuses on birds and small mammals, amphibians, and natural areas. John Lyons, curator of fishes for the UW Zoological Museum, and semi-retired as 33 years as a fisheries research scientist and supervisor for the Wisconsin DNR. Questions or maybe experiences you've had along the lower Wisconsin. Love to hear from you. The number to call, 800-642-1234. You can email us to talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at the lower Wisconsin River today with our two guests, Mike Mossman and John Lyons. Partly because the Wisconsin Wetlands Association is having its annual meeting.
Yeah, science conference.
Science conference. Yeah, I got that wrong. And in the science conference itself is February 24th to the 26th. The area this year, they kind of moved that around. This year, it's Baraboo, Wisconsin Dells, sort of.
Yeah, at the Ho-Chunk Casino.
And you guys are both going to be speaking at that. And there's tons of, you know, a great symposia on the lower Wisconsin, on beavers and wetlands, on cranes and wetlands, kind of a wetlands 101 for students and people new to the game. Mm-hmm. So a lot going on. And I think you go to, we have a link on the Larry Mueller Show page. So if you go to talk@WPR.org/Larry, you'll find that link. But if you type in the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, you're going to find out all the information. You're going to be able to sign up to attend, or you could even sign up. I think all the presentations are videotaped, and you can pay a small amount of money for those and just get those if you can't make it. And a lot of really good speakers. Right now, we've zeroed in on the lower Wisconsin. Bob in Lake Mills has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I know there are, of course, many large snapping turtles in the Wisconsin River and other kinds, I'm sure. I've always wondered if there are alligator snapping turtles in the lower Wisconsin River.
Nope.
I don't even know about alligator snapping turtles.
Oh, that's a thing. And you go further south, they're, think of it as a regular snapping turtle magnified by about five.
Oh.
They're big. But I don't think they get up much above maybe Kentucky or somewhere. And they're really only common in the far south, Louisiana, Florida, places like that. But we have plenty of turtles in the river, lots of different map turtles and snappers in the backwaters and painted turtles, Blanding's turtles, box turtles up on the uplands. So it's a great spot for turtles.
Yeah. Soft shells are really fun along the Riverway.
Yep.
And you see, I mean, have you ever been on the river when you didn't see at least one species of turtle?
Unless it's winter. I mean, if you're out there now. But if you're out there in the summer, it would be unusual not to see a lot of turtles.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Rich in St. Germain will go to you. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Yeah, talking catfish. Where's the catfish? Are they in the lower Wisconsin? Because up north here, all we have is bullheads that I know of. And when I grew up in Illinois, you know, Kankakee River, I loved catching catfish, you know. But where do they start? How far north do they go, do you know?
John?
I can talk about that. First of all, catfish are king in the lower Wisconsin. There are loads of catfish, both channel catfish and then flathead catfish, which is a huge species that can get 50, 60 pounds. So statewide, you get catfish probably the southern two-thirds of the state. If you're up in Rhineland or up in the north, there might be a few, but they're pretty scarce. Bullheads are everywhere. Bullheads are a different type of catfish. But the channel cat, which I think you're, and the flathead maybe that you were fishing for in Illinois, they're pretty common in the rivers and some of the lakes of southern Wisconsin and the Wisconsin River and then the Mississippi, which it flows into. They are really the best places in the state for catfish. And it's a wonderful river to fish for them. I fish there all the time for them. They're great eating. They're very sporty. And basically anywhere in the lower river, anywhere deeper than a few feet, you're going to find catfish.
All right. Rich, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or shoot us an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Cheryl in Merrimack. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I know that your guests are talking about the lower Wisconsin, and I believe that's below the dam at Prairie du Sac. But I'm wondering about the upper Wisconsin. I know there are groups. You're saying that there are groups at the lower Wisconsin who are trying to protect the animals, the birds, the fish, and everything in that area. I'm wondering if there's a group that does that for the upper Wisconsin. I'm specifically talking about Merrimack at this minute, although there are other places. They're proposing a 40-unit hotel right on the shoreline in Merrimack, and that will increase a lot of activity in a little bay that occurs there, and there's a wetland right near there, very close to there. And I'm wondering if anyone's concerned about the animals and the water quality and those sorts of things there. They're supposed to be requesting a 40 pier or slip unit to be able to put in for that increase in boat traffic because of people staying in the hotel and so on and so on. Do you have any other groups in the upper Wisconsin that look after that sort of thing?
Citizens groups. Certainly there are. I would say to begin with, I would assume that the DNR would have some influence on this, John or Mike. John?
Yeah, the DNR will. They'll need a variety of permits from the state in order to do those the things that she's talked about. Cheryl's talked about. You know, the DNR in some ways has a lot less authority than people realize.
Yeah.
So some of this, they can potentially modify. Some of it is they can't. And it's up to the local government, the town or wherever, village of Merrimack, whatever the unit is. There is a group for that. Merrimack is on Lake Wisconsin, which is the impoundment formed by Prairie du Sac Dam. And there is a Lake Wisconsin Association. They're not a conservation group per se, but they're interested in all aspects of Lake Wisconsin, that impoundment. And so that certainly would be one group you could go to. Lots of lakeshore owners, lots of businesses in the area are connected with that. And then obviously the DNR itself, they're going to be reviewing the plans and issuing permits. And there's typically an opportunity for the public to comment. And even if there isn't, you can certainly talk to the people there and you know, put your concerns to them and perhaps put them in writing and get it on the record.
Yeah. But that Lake Wisconsin, I mean, just for a community organization.
Yeah, that's a community organization. It's not strictly a preservation, conservation group. It deals with all aspects of Lake Wisconsin.
But they would be interested in something like
this. Yes, they would certainly be interested in this, and you can talk to them.
Yeah. So, Cheryl, you can find them online, I'm sure. Lake Wisconsin.
It's like the Lake Wisconsin Lake Association or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember the exact name.
But you'll
find it.
Yeah, you'll find it. So there you go, Cheryl. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Somebody wonders, how do scientists decide regulations and limits for the amount or size of sport fish you can catch? And that's in an email, and that depends a lot of different things, because the size limits and everything varies a lot. What about the lower Wisconsin?
The DNR sets those regulations, but the public has a strong input, and so any time a change or a modification is proposed, it goes through a long process with a lot of public input. There's a group called the Conservation Congress, which is an advisory board to the DNR, and basically any regulation proposal would be put for them and gotten their input. And I would say unless they're in support of it, it won't happen. Basically, it'd be unusual for the DNR to kind of override their recommendation. But it's a drawn out process, and it's not done mildly or simply. It takes several years. You have to have lots of data, biological data, to justify the change that's being proposed. And in some cases, you'll have a lot of social data about what people think about it. And so any sort of regulation, there's a long but formalized process, and eventually, if everyone's in agreement, it's about a 3 or 4 year process, and it goes through, and the Natural Resources Board that oversees the Wisconsin DNR then votes to approve or disapprove this regulation. If they approve, then it becomes a new regulation in the next fishing season.
And the size and bag limits is... it varies depending on the fish species.
Yep, it varies. All those things vary depending on the species and the location. So there are different regulations above Prairie du Sac Dam versus below. Some of the tributaries coming into the lower Wisconsin have different regulations. So by and large, the lower Wisconsin has fairly liberal regulations. You can fish there all year for basically everything except muskie and a few other limited things like catfish up by the dam. And most of the bag limits, there are size limits on a lot of the species. There are some bag limits as well, and it varies by species.
Robert emailed us. He spent some time in Avoca Woodlands listening and watching red-headed woodpeckers, and he hopes they're doing well. He sees them around his farm around the West Lima area. Mike, comment on maybe we can comment on birds in general, but start with the red-headed woodpeckers. You don't see them very much in the city of Madison, or at all. Let's put it that way.
It's a pretty interesting bird. I mean, it's a fascinating bird. It's wonderful to watch and listen to. They used to be fairly... they like dead trees, for one thing. So during the elm... the American elm die-off, which is going on in the 70s and 80s, with trees still standing through the 80s, there were a lot of red-headed woodpeckers, and they were actually the most common woodpecker on the river. And then, they've been at low populations and a species of concern since that time throughout eastern North America, really, and throughout Wisconsin. They've been picked up a little bit in recent years, but on the lower Wisconsin River, they have... picked up, especially with the effect of the flooding. There's large expanses of dead trees, and especially with trees that are barkless, the redheads love them. And so they nest in those trees, and they feed by fly catching, you know, flying out and catching flying insects or flying down to the ground, but also on bark and on tip-ups and so on where the where it's flooded. So there's quite a few down there right now. They'll be fewer as those trees collapse.
So they kind of come and go depending on the habitat, obviously.
Yes, right. And they in the forested areas, there's places where they love live oak trees. You know, a lot of they don't always need dead trees, but where you suddenly will see a lot of them is where there's been some disease or maybe fire or some management that's left some dead trees. They'll often come into those as long as the trees are standing. They also love utility poles, and they used to be really common along roadsides in the agricultural landscape, and would often be killed on the roads when they would fly down to get insects off the road, and I haven't seen that for a long time. But now I'm seeing more of them the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, what's the most common species of woodpecker you're going to find down there?
Well, now it's the redhead. Otherwise, it'd be the red-bellied woodpecker, which is, you know, fairly common in forested areas. There's a lot of pileated woodpeckers, downies and hairies, flickers. They've kind of all the woodpeckers of southern Wisconsin are fairly common there, and partly because there is a lot of tree death normally in the riverway, in the floodplain forest, you know, with changes in water levels and erosion of banks and so on. It's pretty normal to see a lot of cavity nesters in these floodplain forests.
And somebody asked about trumpeter swans too. What about trumpeter? You're going to see trumpeters there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. One of the we have what, three species? Yeah.
We
have swans.
Yes. Yeah. So for breeding, we have trumpeters, and we have the exotic mute swan, and the mute swans are haven't seen any of those along the Wisconsin River in recent years, but the trumpeters have come in a big way. So there's probably 10 to 15 pairs nesting on the lower Wisconsin. And if you drive from Prairie du Chien to, Gotham on Highway 60, and especially if you watch as you go down that stretch along the Waseca Bottoms, this big expansive marsh between the river and Highway 60, you watch during late April through July, you'll probably see three or four pairs, maybe five, nesting in little pools there. They've done really well.
Mute swans, as you were saying, I mean, they're not even native to this area, and they're the one swan you can tell apart because of the bills. If I'm remembering, a kind of a yellow bill,
it looks different. They hold their usually neck.
They
hold
their neck
curved.
Yeah,
they don't have that erect posture. And trumpeters and whistling swans, or tundra swans as they're called, can be confused. Trumpeter swans are bigger, and they have some. There's differences.
I better have a binoculars because if they're 50 yards away, I'm not going to be able to tell the difference.
And during the summer, the tundra swans are going to be gone.
We had many more emails. Here's one. Eric emailed us. Back to you, John. He was fortunate to have worked for John at the WDNR after grad school. This is Eric, and spent time with him conducting surveys and shocking fish on the river. And says John is truly a fantastic source for research and conservation.
Wow. Well, where do I send the check? No, that's very nice. I've worked with a lot of great people over the years, and really enjoyed that, being out on the water with different folks. And it is the kind of place, though, that if you're interested in the outdoors, it's just wonderful. The experience is wonderful.
The fall is kind of the best time for me. I love fall season on the lower Wisconsin. By the way, my daughter worked for the DNR, was an intern at the DNR, and spent a lot of time on streams one summer, shocking fish and taking water samples. So it's pretty cool to have that kind of experience. Andrew in Madison emailed for a nice and scenic, for as nice and scenic as the river is, he finds it quite irritating to hear the Jake breaks rumble through the hills. Is there any way to discourage the use of this noise pollution?
I don't know. It's a little wild out there on Highway 60.
Yeah.
So I'm mostly interested in just staying alive when I'm driving around down that road. But.
Yeah, it's narrow and windy.
And it does it, and that, you know, the sound does reverberate off the bluffs, so I understand what Andrew's saying.
Yeah. Listener emailed, as a kid lived along the Apple River, it was quite common to see what they called rubberback turtles. Up close and having to walk around them, they look like they have a shiny flat leather on their back, 12 to 18 inches wide, could be amazingly fast.
Yeah.
What's the proper name and history of this turtle? Our listener wants to know.
It's a soft-shell turtle, and we have two species, the smooth and the spiny. And they look pretty much identical, unless you can get up really close. They're river turtles. They like the backwaters as well. And very fast and like to bite. And if you're out there in early June when they're nesting, you'll see them. Well, you may see them at any time, you know, basking, but they won't be far from they won't be on logs, they'll be on sandbanks, and they won't be far from the water. And they're, you can see how fast they are when they just disappear into the water in an instant. But they nest on the sandbars. And,
sure. So, where they lay their eggs.
Yep.
And once you pick up on visualizing it, they're all over the place in the water, even when you've spooked them. And so if you're in a boat or a canoe and you're passing by, you'll often see their heads sticking out of the water, just their heads looking at you, and then they'll drop out of the way and come back up. So once you tune into it, you'll be amazed at how many soft shells are out there. There's lots.
Very, very cool. Talking today with a couple of experts, semi-retired, I guess you could say, from the DNR, Mike Mossman, DNR ecologist, John Lyons, curator of fishes for the UW Zoological Museum right now. He's semi-retired after 33 years as a fisheries research scientist and supervisor for the Wisconsin DNR. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today. We're taking a look at the Lower Wisconsin River today. It's kind of our two guests today, Mike Mossman and John Lyons, who are both kind of semi-retired from their work with the DNR. Mike's a DNR ecologist. John is a curator of fisheries right now for UW Zoological Museum, but he was 33 years as a fisheries research scientist and supervisor for the DNR. They're both going to be part of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association conference. What's the title of it again, Mike? I don't have it.
Science Conference.
But it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. There's some great symposia, and I hope you go to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association and look it up. You could still sign up for it. You could even sign up on the day of, but probably easier to do it in advance if you can. It's February 24th through the 26th, and a lot going on. Mike in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. Great show again. Sure appreciate you doing all this. I had a couple experiences at the Highway 60 bridge by Prairie du Sac.
Yep.
I've fished there quite a bit, spring, summer, and fall with my hip boots, go out to water level about my knees or so. And one day fishing there on a beautiful day, I hear a big splash, and I look over to my right, and here is a deer that jumped into the river and swam all the way to the other side, probably 50, 60 yards to the east of that Highway 60 bridge, which I thought was really surprising. But I looked behind him to see if dogs or some fox or coyotes were chasing him, but nothing. I don't know why he did that, but that deer wanted to go from one side to the other.
I've seen it on lakes, especially depending on the time of the year, especially sometimes if guys are training bear dogs or whatever, that deer will, in this case, I had a couple deer swim across Black Lake on northern Wisconsin while I was musky fishing and watching the two of them, and I could hear some dogs, so assumed that was probably what was going on.
Yeah, I guess let's get to the other side.
Why
does the chicken cross the road?
Get the other side.
So much of the river is shallow, too, that not so much there, but a lot of places on the river you can walk halfway across it. I mean, you can never walk all the way across it.
Yeah.
There'll always be at least one channel that you're going to submerge in. But.
And you had a beaver encounter, too, Mike, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I did. Fishing again right there where I often fish. I heard a big splash behind me, and I turn and look, and I see the very end of a beaver tail dive underneath. And he was, I don't know, 15, 20 feet from me. I think he came up and saw me and then slapped his tail and went down. When he came up about 30, 40 feet from me, he had a baby on his back. A little beaver on his back. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, you were a lucky guy, Mike, because I've never seen that. And Mike or...
I've seen the kits, young ones swimming in the water there, but not on an adult's back. But so that's very cool.
Yeah. Great story, Mike. Thank you for calling. Ken and Howard, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Yes, good morning, Larry. I just have what I experienced, and I have a couple ponds behind my house. Now, I'm just west of 141, right off of Green Bay, the bay itself, and I'm on the end of the big marsh. But anyway, I suggest if you want to see turtles, put a big log in the water. And I get 15, 20 turtles every spring, every day, sunning themselves. And I think that's kind of a good way to improve the turtle habitat.
Ken, thanks for calling. Mike?
Yeah, we do that. We do that at home. Throw a log out there and let it float around for a few years before it sinks and count the turtles on them. It's one of the many arguments for having some dead wood in the water. I mean, turtles do get an advantage of being able to warm up out there and when they're basking.
Yeah.
And there's lots of reasons to have logs half submerged or either outside or under the water.
Not only for turtles.
Yeah.
Ken, thanks for that comment. Appreciate it. Jordan in Marengo, your turn. Hi, Jordan.
Hey there. We paddled from Spring Green to Boscobel two summers ago. I'd recommend do it during the week. Not the weekend. There was so muddy out there in August. We had the river to ourselves. Amazing experience. But my question is, we're backcountry people. We've got, the high-tech water purifiers and stuff like that. I'd like to get an opinion about using water purification systems to use the river itself for drinking or cooking, or are we better off just bringing along our own potable water? Thanks.
Yeah.
I camp on the river a lot. I always bring my own, but I don't know why I couldn't filter it.
Yeah, it's just more work to filter it. Yeah. If you got to get a big bucket of water, it takes a while. But I would think I certainly wouldn't drink it without filtering. But there's nothing that a filter isn't going to take out if you use it correctly.
And it's not very, generally not very turbid water, so it's usually doesn't have a lot of solids in it.
On a kind of another matter, well, related to this, though, it reminded me about the upcoming, we're going to be talking about plastic and microplastic pollution in the Great Lakes coming right up here in a little bit. Any work on that, on pollution, as plastic pollutions as far as the Wisconsin River is concerned that you know of?
I don't know of anything.
I don't know of anything, but given that everywhere they look, they find it, I'm certain it's there. And I'm certain and it tends to be correlated with proximity to people and proximity to, you know, industry and things like that. So the fact that there isn't a lot of settlement or housing and so forth on the river probably means it might be a little bit lower than average, but there's no doubt there's lots of plastic, microplastic pollution. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere.
The river itself, though, is really free of garbage, pretty much.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing. It's, you know, the rules are, you know, pack in, pack out,
right.
And you're not allowed to have glass on the riverway, and you know, so it is a lot of plastic being used. But it's pretty rare to see stuff.
Anything,
is garbage.
There are some threats to the health of the river. I think climate change comes to mind a little bit.
That's one thing that's really concerning for me, because it changes the whole riverway, and it's not pollution in a sense, but it's the changes in hydrology that have come with these huge rain events and with droughts that are more frequent. So both, you know, in the last 10 or 20 years, you've got many records for dry periods and wet periods. The lower Wisconsin has been repeatedly flooded during the summer for weeks on end, and it's killed a lot of trees. It's also, I'm sure, killed a lot of turtle nests on the sandbars, which can't stand submersion generally more than a few days at a time. And of course, they're all designed, you know, to lay their eggs after the spring floods, you know, generally in late May, early June. And now there's, you get out there and you'll find that there's turtle nests that are inundated for long periods of time. So that's one issue, and I don't know what we can do about that other than, you know, vote for people that are gonna try to combat climate change and watch our own carbon footprint, and also for anyone in the watershed. The watershed for the lower Wisconsin, of course, is huge. to find ways to really nurture the wetlands and allow water to sink into the ground and be held back and not rushed down so fast. I mean, that's about the only things we can do for that issue, besides try to develop floodplain forests outside of the immediate floodplain.
And that's kind of one of the advantages that we have there in the lower Wisconsin. I mean, we've got a natural system kind of going there.
John also has been dealing with some other, you know, sorts of pollution there.
I mean, one of the issues is those sand terraces, even though they're not ideal farming areas, have become heavily farmed lately. And it's an issue because those areas have to be irrigated. They have to be heavily fertilized in order to grow a crop. And unfortunately, that leads to a lot more nitrogen pollution, primarily going into the groundwater, the shallow groundwater, which is what actually feeds then a lot of the sloughs and the ponds and the backwater areas along the river. And it's led to a lot of areas, a lot of the backwater lakes getting huge algae blooms and really degraded habitat, degraded water quality. And again, not an easy solution, not something that the average citizen can do by themselves, but we need some sort of better management of some of those terraces along the riverway, along the floodplain, and some of the activities going on there, agricultural activities.
Well, here we are out of time, and I want to thank you both very much. This is a lot of fun. Let's see. Let's do this in another 25 years.
Sure.
No. Okay. They were last on 20-some years ago, but let's try and do it sooner next time around. Mike Mossman.
I think we better.
Semi-retired DNR ecologist John Lyons, also semi-retired after 33 years of fisheries research with the Wisconsin DNR. Coming up, we're going to take a look at microplastics in the Great Lakes. I'm Larry Mueller.